Bom dia, boa tarde. Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 219, a bit of a bittersweet week. Depends on the fan of the club you are. I think with regards to all of Portugal, very disappointing to see a Portuguese club, the last club eliminated from Europe, Benfica, basically only penalty kicks away from possibly advancing to the Europa League Final Four. That did not happen. I'll talk about the big, big other disappointment in that. And will Roger Schmidt keep his job? You know, we're going to be thinking a lot about football the next week, but really the story of the next week is going to be the FC Porto club election between Pinto da Costa and Andres Villas-Boas. They've already announced the people that are going to be a part of working for them in the next mandate. It's getting very interesting. I'll talk about that. Ruben Amorim, what's going on with Ruben? He's going to be in a position to win the double, but what's going on with Liverpool? I'll have some thoughts. We'll do the Big Four report, women's football report. And if you've been following this episode, I think I started this about 100 episodes ago, maybe, talking about my favorite team in Portugal, my hometown team from Arcos de Valverde, and the first dream has happened. They have been promoted to the fourth tier. I'm going to talk about my emotions with that and what happened this weekend and the tremendous celebrations that took place in Arcos de Valverde. And then I will end it with my mailbag edition. But let me just get started here first and talk about Benfica. And if you have listened to the last episodes, I have been thoroughly consistent in this remark when I say that when Portuguese clubs go to Europe, especially in the knockout stages, they really can't be winning matches 1-0 at home, 2-1, 3-2. You need to be going to that second leg if you happen to be away, or you need to basically go into that second leg with a very, very good advantage, sometimes at least 2 goals. And you also have to score a goal at least when you go on the road in these elimination tournaments. And Benfica wins at home 2-1. They go to Marseille. Marseille ties it with about 10 minutes left. They go to penalty kicks, and Marseille is going to advance to the Final Four. We've been beaten out of the fifth spot by French clubs. A French club has eliminated us. I have talked sometimes about, will we see a Portuguese club make it to the Final Four, a semifinal of a European competition? And I get very, very worried that that is becoming harder and harder. Some of you will say, what about the Europa Conference League? Our fourth and fifth place teams every year that go to try to qualify for the Europa Conference League, in these last 3 years, none of our clubs have qualified for the group stages of the Europa Conference League. We're always starting off in September without our, fifth and sixth best club. They're already eliminated out of Europe. So we have that disappointment. The only thing that might be good is if Braga somehow doesn't finish third, fourth, and drops to fifth, maybe we finally might have a team that not only may qualify for the Europa Conference League, but actually gain us some points there, because we never get points with the Europa Conference League. And that is technically the easiest competition of the three, and the points are all the same. But a lot of disappointment for Benfica. They did not score in Marseille. They allowed it to slip through their hands. It is a big, big disappointment. Benfica right now, with Roger Schmidt, may not win any trophies this year. And I guess the big question will be for Roger Schmidt is, will he be returning next season? My opinion, as I record episode 219, is I don't necessarily see Rui Costa making a change, unless a manager that Rui Costa is a big fan of that might be available might force Rui Costa to make that move. But it's disappointing. It's disappointing that we have the ability to compete, to try to be in the quarterfinals, but everything after the quarterfinals just doesn't seem to be happening anymore. And I think the last time we had a team in the quarterfinals, I think it was 2012. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that was the last time when Benfica made it to the Europa League. It was back-to-back years, really the last time that Portuguese clubs have done so well in Europe in terms of making it to the latter stages of a European competition. So very big disappointing. The biggest question now is Roger Schmidt's future. They're trailing Sporting by 7 points with 5 matches left. That's going to be very hard to come back from. And that's the question I think a lot of Benfica fans. Right now, Roger Schmidt is not the most favorite people in the world. When last year at this time, they had such a big league and they were on their way to winning the league after like 4 or 5 years. And it seemed like he could do no wrong, you know. And this year, awful Champions League campaign. They have struggled throughout the season, although they still managed to stay within 1 point of Sporting up until the last few weeks. And now the questions will begin about next year's team. Rafa is going to be leaving unless they renew with him, but it looks like he's gone. And where would Benfica be without Rafa this year? So that's very interesting to see what will happen in the future. The big future, though, the immediate future, is going to be what's going to be happening at Futebol Clube do Porto. I still be dropping episode 220 next week because the election is only going to be on Saturday, April the 27th. But I just want to spend a few minutes on it because I want people to understand what's at stake here. First off, we have a Portuguese president who has been leading the club at Porto for something like 42 years. Not many people, unless you own your own business, work in the same job or at least in the same location for over 40 years, and he has done it. Porto, whether you agree with him or not, whether you like him or not, the success of the club compared to before Pinto da Costa took over, obviously it speaks for itself. They have won European competitions. They have represented the club internationally, and obviously they've been a big competitor in the Liga. Some years, especially the Joaldo Ferreira years, where they just dominated with Fernando Santos, those few years they dominated. Conceição, they won a few trophies with him, of course. He's the most successful manager in Porto history. But now we have this selection in Andres Villas-Boas, a former manager who had one of the more successful seasons as a Porto manager. He was only at Porto 1 year before he left for Chelsea, and I don't think that ever sat well with Pinto da Costa. And now Villas-Boas, who has always talked about becoming a president of Porto, is finally doing it, and we might have ourselves now a great race to see who's going to win this. Because Pinto da Costa, the last time he won his election, I think he won it with 80% of the vote. Now that number is going to be significantly less, to you question whether or not he even has 50% of the vote. The cousins I have from like France and Portugal that I talk to on WhatsApp and to get their feelings, a lot of them want to change. They are tired of controversies. They are tired of seeing the problems with the team on the sideline, the accusations, regardless of whether or not people think they're true or not. They want Porto to go back to a club that wins, is successful, and is in the news for all the right reasons. Or at the very least, is in the news for all the right reasons in the Ojogo. You know, that we don't have issues like financial fair play, which I'll talk about in a minute. But this is a very big election because Pinto da Costa is threatened, where Villas-Boas, he's got a shot. Now, I would say, and I'll think a little bit more about this, and I'll make a prediction about this next Friday before episode 220, before the election, but I would say right now, there's an opportunity for Villas-Boas. And I think if you're Pinto da Costa, you have to be concerned because there are some people that want to change. A lot of bad news this week with financial fair play, which I'll talk about in the mailbag edition. Someone asked me to talk about it. But we've got, Porto has problems. Besides the fact that they're not going to win the Liga, right now their only trophy to play for is the Taça de Portugal, which they'll be doing in a Clássico with Sporting on May the 26th in the Jamor. But this club it just had a very rough season. And what's also interesting about people is everyone acknowledges that Pinto da Costa has been a very good leader for the club. He's brought prestige to the city. But there are people that are tired of him as well, too. The people who still support Pinto da Costa feel like for someone who has put in as much time as he has for this club, how much blood, guts, sweat, that to leave losing and then all of a sudden on Sunday, he doesn't even have the keys to his office anymore. He doesn't have the ability to sit in the press box anymore or whatever he does. He loses his presidency and the benefits. There are a lot of people that feel that's not the right way for him to go out. And that's why some people wish that maybe he did retire, because then he would not have the situation of having to leave possibly losing. Now, I still think right now, and again, I'll make a prediction next episode, I think this race is, in my opinion right now, 60% Pinto da Costa, 40% Villas-Boas. I think Pinto da Costa, people realize that with him, they've been more successful. There are still a lot of people, while they want change, there's as many people that don't like change, and they rather stick to the status quo and hope that next year this club gets back to where it's supposed to be. But we have to see what's going to happen. But there's a lot of question marks with Porto, and Pinto da Costa leaving would be mammoth, mammoth news in Portuguese football, that one of the biggest figures, whether you agree with this or not, may not possibly be the Porto president next week. And that's incredible to think of when you think about his longevity. And Porto has a lot of problems. The election, apparently, of, I read something that about 70,000, there are about 70,000 sócios. These are individuals that pay monthly a membership fee to be a sócio of the club, a member of the club. They have the right to vote. Something like 30,000 of them, they have not paid up their latest dues. So because of that, they are not eligible to vote. So it comes down to something like over 40,000 sócios that will decide this election. And that could work in Villas-Boas' favor, because that's 30,000 less people voting. And probably a lot of them probably would have voted for Pinto da Costa, in my opinion, the diehards. On the other hand, could be a lot of people that are tired of the club and are basically showing their displeasure by not paying the dues. And that perhaps could work in Villas-Boas' favor. I don't know. But it's a very interesting situation. It is going to be a mammoth election. In my opinion, one of the more important ones, only because we might see one of the biggest figures in Portuguese football possibly lose his job. And if Villas-Boas wins, he's already made arrangements. Jorge Costa, who manages AVS right now in the second division, they're in second place, looking good to get promoted, but not quite done yet. He's, of course, a former Porto defender. He would have been talked about coming in as the director of football. Wouldn't be surprised if something goes wrong and he eventually becomes a manager. He's not been a terribly, let's be honest with you, hasn't been a great, great manager, but he's certainly been very successful managing second division football, where chances are in the second division, you're actually managing players to win and not necessarily worrying about putting players on the field because you're trying to keep their values up so they can be sold at the end of the season. So in terms of managing a player instead of managing for value, maybe he's found his niche and he's done very well in the second division. But he will finish out the season, and if Andres Villas-Boas wins, he will become the director of football. There was a sports director at Marseille that Villas-Boas is going to bring in, so we'll see. Pinto da Costa has basically announced who's going to be working for him in some of the top positions. Antonio Oliveira, you probably remember him. He managed the Portuguese national team. He managed, I think, Porto at one point. He says that if Pinto da Costa doesn't win, he doesn't see how Porto's ever going to win titles again. Now, that's obviously just talk to scare Porto fans. But let me just say this on this last topic. The next 7 days from when I drop this episode up until the election on the 27th, there's going to be major going back and forth between Pinto da Costa and Andres Villas-Boas. There's going to be a lot of allegations. There's going to be a lot of insults. And let me tell you, that is going to be a very, very big election. These elections tend to run all night. They usually don't have a winner until like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning next weekend. It's going to be very interesting from a drama point of view, and I think you should check that out. The other big news, bigger last week, not so much bigger this week, and that's Andres Villas-Boas. Of course, everybody knows. The reports are, if they are to be believed, that he is the leading candidate, and I say it that way, not with any sarcasm, but there was, I think, somebody on Twitter, a very respectable Portuguese analyst, who said that, you know, Ruben Amorim was the man, that he is the only one being considered. But I refuse to believe that a billion-dollar organization like Liverpool, which is owned by the guy who also owns the Red Sox and a few other entities, I refuse to believe that that club doesn't have plan A, B, C, D, E, and F ready to go with managers. But Ruben Amorim could probably be their number one choice. There's no doubt about it. But to assume that he is the only one they want and they're not paying attention to other managers would be wrong. Who's to say that anybody that's changed their mind, that said no to them, might change their mind again? This is, after all, Liverpool. But it's been a quiet week, though. Ruben Amorim joked this week that even his kid told him to stay. Ruben Amorim is doing a fantastic job. He's got Sporting 3 wins away, and that could happen in the Dragon, in the Clásico, in a few weeks, from winning their second title in 4 years. And remember, before he became manager, they hadn't won in something like 19 years. So things are going right with Ruben Amorim. They're going very, very right, and he's got a chance to do the double because Sporting is also in the Taça de Portugal final on May the 26th in Jamor. So my thing is he would be a great manager, although I still wish he would go to a more modest club. But at the end of the day, if there's an opportunity for him and he really, really wants it, and if reports are to be believed, then the job is his as long as they could come to a financial agreement. The degree of difficulty will be higher. The amount of room he has to make mistakes and still be okay will be smaller. You lose two matches in a row and everybody's going to be on top of you complaining. That's the downside to it. However, going to manage one of the biggest clubs in the world, which I believe is coming to the U.S. this summer, for the Portuguese fans out there that are curious, I believe, I have to double check that, would be very interesting to see Ruben Amorim managing in the Premier League. So we'll have to see if that in fact does happen. Moving on, just a reminder, if you want to send me any email comments criticizing what I said or wishing to say something and complimenting me or just telling the world of Portuguese football, soccer fans what you think, psoccercom@gmail.com, psoccercom@gmail.com. Of course, you can also follow PortugueseSoccer.com on Twitter, X, whatever they call it these days. Same thing, Portuguese_soccer_noticias on Instagram and Threads. And, of course, Portuguese Soccer on Facebook. And I got some comments that I'll be reading toward the end of this episode. But let's get moving here. Continuing, that is the Women's Football Report. The biggest story last week in women's football was the big derby between Benfica and Sporting. And I said last week that if Sporting had any hope of still competing for first place, they had to win and beat Benfica. And guess what? They did. They beat Benfica at home 3-1. And therefore, instead of trailing by 5 points, they are now only trailing by 2 points. There's only a few match days left, but they're trailing by 2 points. And the race that everybody knows, because they are the two biggest clubs in Portugal, Benfica and Sporting, is on. Sporting this weekend will be going to Madeira to play Marítimo. And Benfica will be at home. They have the easier match this week. They'll be playing last place with only 6 points and a minus 37 goal differential. Vila Verdense. So Benfica will have the advantage. And again, we're getting toward the end of the season. And it's a two-way race between Benfica and Sporting. Both of these teams have already qualified for the Women's Champions League this summer. Now they're just playing for the, of course, big trophy. This weekend, if I recall, is the Women's Taça de Portugal. I think this weekend, if I recall, is the final. They are now playing first division football. Matter of fact, let me actually confirm that right now. I should probably already know this, but I believe this weekend is the Taça de Portugal final. I don't know if they do it in the Jamor, and I'm not able to find it right now. But I know this week they are now playing women's football. And again, if I have any more information, I'll tweet it out. But let me just continue on here, and let's go to managerial report in the Liga. So last week, Daniel Sousa, you know, he's still managing Arouca, but he is set to join Braga. So we had our first big managerial change after Artur Jorge left to go manage in Brazil. This week we had two more changes. You know, with five matches left, we've already had three managerial changes that are all set for next season. The big one was at Boa Vista. Jorge Simon left Académico do Viseu to manage Boa Vista for these last five matches. And I'll do my preview for this weekend, by the way, here in a minute. But Jorge Simon, who managed them about 5 years ago, he's going to take over Boa Vista. Boa Vista's okay. They're in 12th place. I don't really see them in any relegation issue. They should be fine, but he takes over at Boa Vista, who make the quick change. And meanwhile, Gil Vicente, I had briefly spoke about this last week, they made a change, getting the manager from Tunela Tuzi Moreku. He is the new manager of Gil Vicente. So we've seen three end-of-the-season managerial changes, which is very rare to see with Braga, Gil Vicente, and Boa Vista. And those changes have been made. And match day 30, another busy, busy weekend of football. I think one of the bigger matches this weekend is Sporting at home to Vitória Guimarães. Guimarães disappointed this week to lose in the cup at Porto, losing on aggregate 4-2. But Vitória Guimarães will be going to Sporting. Sporting expecting their biggest attendance of the season at home as excitement grows and the smell of the championship gets closer. That match is being played on Sunday. But everything gets going on match day 30 of the Liga. Betclic, Rio Ave against Arouca. Red hot Arouca. again, climbing the charts up to seventh place. They will begin it on Friday night. Then you've got three matches on Saturday. Moreirense, Gil Vicente, Boa Vista, Estrela Amadora, Braga, Vizela. You've got four matches on Sunday. Casa Pia, Porto, Sporting, like I said, Vitória, Guimarães. And then everything will end on Monday with Feirense having a pretty decent season, mid-table. They'll be taking on Benfica and their injured Pride losing in the penalty kicks of the quarterfinals of the Europa League. And again, the big question will be what will be the story with the future of Roger Schmidt. But to me, the two matches of interest to me this weekend is Sporting Vitória Guimarães. Can Vitória Guimarães, in a battle with Porto and Braga for third place, they need to win this. And if they did, it would be a big help to Benfica. But it would also be a big help to Vitória in their dream to try to at least make it to third place. But Porto, 59 points. Braga, 59 points. And Vitória Guimarães, 57. The battle is on for third place. I don't think Porto likes hearing that they're battling with Braga and Vitória for positions. But that's what's happened with Porto. 18 points behind Sporting. They have lost 15 points to Sporting in terms of they were trailing, I think, by 3 points right around Christmas time. And now they're trailing by 18. That's as bad as is it gotten. The other match of interest to me, I would probably be Feirense Benfica, only because Feirense is having a good season. And we'll see how Benfica will respond. And I think Arouca, Rio Ave is not a bad match as well on Friday night. Second division report. Let me tell you, it gets very interesting here in the second division. The big story in this division is it's becoming a three-way race. Maritimo last week dropped points. So right now you got Santa Clara, 60 points. You got AVS, 59. You got Nacional, 56 with five matches left. The race is wide open between first, second, and third place. Top two get promoted. Third place goes to the playoff. And I believe the last 2 years, the third place team has beaten the 16th place team in the playoffs. So they've managed to go up. So it's good to be in third place in the second division. Maritimo, again, lost some points. They're not necessarily out of it for third place against their rival from the island, Madeira Nacional, but certainly trailing by 5 points with five matches left is not in a very good position to be in. We've got some good matches this weekend. Really liking Santa Clara against Tundela, who has a new manager after their manager left to go manage Gil Vicente. We also have AVS at home. They're playing, by the way, only next Wednesday against FC Porto B. I wonder if that's because it's a TV game. Or I just wonder if maybe that's because Jorge Costa is going to be busy. I don't think it would have anything to do with the election. I just don't know why they're playing in the middle of the week. That could be a TV reason. And then looking at this as well, Nacional, where are you? Nacional's at home. They're also not going to be playing. They're going to be playing on Monday at home against Benfica B at home in Nacional. So that is your first and second division report. Moving on here, let's talk about the Big Four report. Like I always do, I just give you a little bit of the Liga report with regards to three managerial changes already. First off, a quick thing, player abroad, tough week for Bernardo Silva, City out of the Champions League. And that was a very tough spot for Bernardo Silva. Hopefully that does not hurt his confidence ahead of the Euro this summer. Jose Mourinho is starting to be mentioned in jobs. People still talking about him for the Benfica job. I do not see it, even though I know he said a few weeks ago he would always be open to going to Portugal, but I just don't see him going to Benfica. If he does come to Portugal, my friend, it'll be to manage the national team, the Seleção. That's probably his last dream, but right now he's looking for the next big opportunity in Europe. Porto, tough situation this week, and again, I'll answer the financial fair play question in the mailbag. But there was a report that four or five players, Ivan Jaime was one of them, Nico, are basically training on the side. They have not lived up to expectations. And the truth of the matter is if you really think about it, a lot of the Porto players that they've gotten this past year have not lived up to expectation. Tereme has been in a bit of a tough situation because he's headed to Italy. And even though he did play this week, especially now with Evan Nielsen being suspended, it's been a very rough season for Porto. But what's amazing is, and sometimes people say, why don't you play up the young talents more? And one of the reasons why is I understand the politics of it. I understand the economics of it. You know, you want kids to have a big move it up. But there are a lot of people that pay attention to the young players in Portugal and a lot of people that put a lot of things into it. And I think for me, players, young players, especially when we complain that they're sold too soon, need to be able to grow up on their own and become professional athletes and not put a lot of pressure on. And Ivan Jaime, who last year was with Familiar Kong and was considered to be one of the best young players in Portugal, I forgot about him at Porto until I saw this report about four players not training with the first team because of their they've been such disappointments or something like that. But Ivan Jaime was a fantastic prospect. What in the world happened to him? He is not, I mean, he was supposed to be the guy last year. Him and the other striker that Porto brought from Gil Vicente were supposed to bring back the spark for Porto. And what a disappointment it has been on the reinforcement front. So don't be surprised if the scouting department is going to undergo some changes real soon. But there are some players that, you know, again, whenever a player is associated with the Portuguese club, they get the press treatment, they get the covers, all that stuff. And I've always been, to me, very quiet about it because not everybody becomes a great player. Not everybody like a João Félix becomes João Félix. You know, not everybody becomes Bruno Fernandes. I've always felt that players need to be, you know, be very gentle with them. You know, we don't need everybody. I mean, look at David Carmo. Was the pressure too much for him at Porto that eventually he had to leave to go to Greece? But there are some young players at Porto that have not lived up to expectation. Can a new manager bring out the best in them if Sergio Conceição leaves? We'll find out. But that was a very big surprise. Braga, when you talk about young players, Roger Fernandes, under-23 player, has been sent to the under-23 squad. He was playing with the first team. They're having a very hard time coming to a renewal with him. So the club stance on not agreeing to a deal with him, they're going to send him to train with the under-23. This is a very common Portuguese tactic. I think it hurts the player's confidence, in my opinion. But at the end of the day, as we know, this is a business. And the club wants to renew with him and set themselves up for a big transfer in the future, just like any other Portuguese club. That really is no different. Sporting, you know, 3 wins, that's it. They will win their 4th trophy in 4 years. Their 2nd trophy in 4 years. And I already talked to you about Benfica and Roger Schmidt and the disappointment of the Europa League. As I always say, you got to win your games at home by multiple goals and go to these European competitions with a 2-goal advantage. Every time we go there with a 1-goal advantage, especially the last few years, nothing ever works out. Let me get to one of my favorite parts of my weekly podcast. I started doing this about maybe over 100 episodes ago, and it's been frustrating because I've tried to get them. I've rooted for them from afar. I can't watch them because they don't put any of their games available on video anywhere to stream. But after a long 3 years and all the talking I've done here, I'm very proud to announce that my club, Atlético dos Arcos, from the 5th tier, the districts, won the Viana do Castelo region, and they are promoted to the 4th tier. They won this weekend at home. Major celebrations erupted throughout the city of Arcos. I was watching everything on social media in the Lapa, the roundabout there, down by the bridge. Players were on the buses circling around town, getting everybody's adulation. People drove into town just to join the festivities. It was a party that was not planned, and it turned into a very nice, fun party. There's still a few matches left, but it doesn't matter. They are going up to the 4th tier. My dream is to see them maybe go as high one day as the 2nd tier, because I don't think they have the resources to get any bigger. It's not going to be easy. They're going to have to spend more money next year with playing the Campeonato de Portugal, the 4th tier. But you know my frustration. You know how long I've talked about this, and for it to finally happen is a lot of fun. They'll be playing the Taça de Portugal next year, although that would have still been the case because they would have finished top two. But they'll be playing probably better seeded, a better opponent. And I'm just excited. I'm excited that we're going to be playing in the 4th tier. I'm excited about some of the competition. But it's going to be tough. Going to have to get a bigger budget. Next year could be a rough year, but they just got to make sure next year that they stay up. Clubs very rarely, unless you're like Belenenses a few years ago, go from 5 to 4 to 3 right away. Next year, it's about stability. It's about making sure that your players are comfortable and that you stay up. And then in that 2nd year, you try to make your move for the 3rd division. So if you can't tell by the sound of my voice, I am very, very happy. Let me finish it off now like I always do with the mailbag edition. And I'm very glad this week that I have Well, I got a few good ones, depending on my schedule and what I'm able to do. I want to catch up to one that was sent to me 2 weeks, that was sent to me the previous one, and I didn't get a chance get to it, and I want to get to it right now. This was from Dan. I believe he's writing from England. I was surprised to hear about Arthur Jorge had left Braga for Botafogo in Brazil. If I remember correctly, Bruno Lage was the last manager, head coach at Botafogo. He was, but I don't think he was the last one there. I'm with Arroca on this dispute with Braga. There will always be rumors, but unless a deal for Daniel Souza would be completed before the game, Braga should have kept quiet until after this match. Yep, I think they left a lot of conflict of interest that it was announced before that match, so I agree with you there. A question I have for you is actually to do with managers in Portugal. Do you think there's a real possibility that Sporting, Benfica, and Porto all begin next season with new managers? Thank you for all your podcasts. I'm a Wolves fan listening in England, hoping that Pedro Neto can get fit, stay fit, and go to the Euro this summer. I hope so too, my man. Thank you, Dan, so much. I actually answered this last week, which is why I feel bad I didn't read it, but it looks like we're heading in that direction. It looks like Ruben Amorim will be at a bigger club next year in terms of one of the big leagues, that is. Obviously, he's in a big club in Portugal. Benfica could be leaning toward replacing Schmidt. And I think Ponce Song, especially if Pinto da Costa loses, I could see him possibly move on. He might need a change of scenery. He gets very frustrated. So, yes, there is that possibility. We've already seen three managerial changes already in time that are going to be around for next season. I wouldn't be surprised. None of this stuff will happen with these big clubs until probably June. But I definitely see that as a possibility. So, Dan, thank you for... My next comment comes from a big Porto fan. By the way, if you get a chance, FCP1992 on Twitter X, I'd love to know your opinions on Pinto da Costa. But he was responding to the reports that Porto is back on their financial fair play regulations. And, you know, and his question is how can they be under FFP and make a profit? Maybe discuss this on the podcast. So here's what I found out. For the months of, I think, December... I think it was either November, December of 2023 until February of 2024. Whatever the rules are with UEFA, with financial fair play, they're saying that Porto didn't follow it. Now, when Porto reports a profit of $35 million for a trimester, they're essentially reporting, as I understand it, and if I'm wrong, anybody out there, correct me. They're essentially reporting for a 4-5 month time period what the finances were in that time. They're not necessarily talking about the big picture. They're talking about that window, and when you're a club that has investors, that's what they do with these financial reports. So Porto did have a very good fall. Obviously, they made some sales last summer. I think Otavio was one of the big ones, and that plays a factor in why they made as much money as they did. But these reports that come out, they call it the trimester, they're not reports for the whole picture of the club. They're reports only for like a 4-5 month period. And Porto in that time, yes, did do something like a profit of $35 million. But apparently, when it comes to financial fair play regulations, and I've read a lot of articles about this to try to give you and the viewers an answer, Porto sent their finance guy to Nyon, where UEFA is headquartered in Switzerland, to basically sit down with them and say, okay, what exactly is it that we did wrong? Because Porto is a little bit confused. Porto has debt. Seems like, and I've talked about this in the past, every other week someone's complaining that they haven't been paid. There is an issue there, and Villas-Boas wants to attack it when he becomes president. But apparently that's the story, that somehow, whatever it is in the financial fair play, and until we hear more about it in the future, something Porto did not do for a three-month period that puts him at risk to possibly be suspended from Europe. If they pay something like a $2 million penalty, they'll be fine. If they don't, then they could be banned for, I think it's something like up to 3 years. So Porto's going to pay the penalty. Okay, they're going to pay the penalty. It'll come out of their profit. But it's not a good situation if you're Porto, that you're in these financial fair plays. And it's one report for a few months that was very good. And then there's apparently another month set up with UEFA that basically says in that month, whatever UEFA wants Porto to do to have get out of their financial issues, they said that Porto didn't do it. That's the best way I can describe it. But Porto did have a very good year, but they apparently are still not. And again, we need clarification for when Porto goes, or if they haven't already gone, to figure out what in the world is going on over at Porto. I'm going to wrap up episode 219 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Great week with my club Atlético dos Arcos. Disappointing week for Portuguese clubs. We have none left in Europe, which is very, very disappointing. And that's it. We move on. 5 match days left. Will Sporting win the rest of the way? Does Benfica have any hope? What's going to go on with the battle for third place? Great battle going with relegation. I love the second division battle. Benfica Sporting and women's football is a good battle. So we still have some very good storylines. And then, of course, in my opinion, what will happen with the Porto election next week? That is a big, big story in Portugal. Folks, I'm going to wrap up episode 219 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Any comments, peacesoccercom@gmail.com. And as always, please take care of yourselves. Please take care of your family. And I'll talk to you soon, everybody. Ciao.